The Joint Committee on Ways and Means, we're here today to do a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3815, which is a bill that is relating to agriculture. I'll open the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3815 and have John Fletcher, our legislative analyst, give us the summary of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3815 is a bill which updates laws regulating the sale, distribution, and labeling of fertilizers, agricultural minerals, agricultural amendments, and lime. Many of the regulations under current law are out of date with national standards for monitoring, labeling, and registration. The bill is supported by the Department of Industry and is intended to bring Oregon law up to par with surrounding states and national standards. Under the bill, the Department of Agriculture is directed to provide inspection, enforcement, and rulemaking for these fertilizer, agricultural minerals, and other products. Fines can be imposed as necessary and proper to ensure public health and safety. The bill creates some civil penalties for gross negligence or willful harm to human health and or the environment. Fertilizer Research Committee is established under the bill to advise the Department of Agriculture in their rulemaking. Current law requires the registration of brands, which may be a family of different products. The bill changes this and requires registration of each individual product rather than just the brand. There are a few amendments that we have proposed, and if you look on page 5 of the handout material, there's a chart which shows the current amount in column 2, the A engrossed amount, which is in your bill as it currently reads, and the proposed amount, which would include the proposed amendments that we have talked to the department about. The department is in support of the amendments. The amendment changes the product registration fee to the level it is at today, except we go from $25 per brand to $25 per product, but we don't go to $50 per product. It keeps it at the same level, but just changes from a brand registration to a product registration. And that's the major change in the amendment. At the bottom on this chart, it shows in the proposed amount some other changes. These aren't really changes, though. The statute does, in the A engrossed version, have some different amounts, but the proposed amounts are the proposed amounts the department plans to implement under the bill.
Question of brand and versus
product.
Mm-hmm. Brand would be, the names of any of these.
Scotts,
and it would be all of the fertilizers under that.
And they would register
that way.
They would register Scotts instead of all the different products that they
have. So right now we're paying, somebody's paying, I guess they're not paying anything. They would pay $25 to register Scotts, and they'd carry Turf Builder and all of, Moss Out and all the rest of those individual ones. Under this, they would pay $25 for each one of those individuals?
That's correct.
I was wondering what you can get for $25 from a state agency and thinking that much, but I guess if you're going to do all of them, you can probably get a fair amount.
And there's some reasons.
Is this annual? Representative Krieger has a question.
Just real quick, Madam Chair. Tell us what this does dollars-wise, real quick, as far as the difference between brand and product. As far as what comes into the state through the fees, where's that at?
Well, the fiscal, which shows the effect of the proposed amendment and this change, is on page 6. And it brings in additional revenue of $188,000 in 2001-03. In 05, it's $217,347. Now, the amount of expenditures to administer the program, you'll notice, are higher than those amounts. And it's not intended that this program creates a deficit, but they currently have some cash carryover
in this dedicated fund, that they can draw down that balance, and they are not expected to need fee adjustments for 4 years, according to our projections. And so between the keeping the fees as low as they can be and using the ending balance, they can provide this program as outlined in the bill.
We also have members, the Department of Agriculture, coming forward to testify on the bill, and a number of people representing agricultural industry groups that will be coming forward too.
So, again, just to summarize, there are some proposed amendments for your consideration. When we get to work session, we can decide if we would like to adopt those. So, in summary, I've provided in your packet a description of what the amendments are, the rationale, the chart that I showed you, and the fiscal. And then when we get to work session on page 8, the very last page talks about the legislative fiscal office recommendation, but we'll talk about that when we get to work session.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments?
Madam Chair, just so I am clear with John, in looking at that particular page, page number 5, current caps are fixed, current amounts, $25 a brand. The proposed cap is a $50
The amount, but that you're saying that's a part of the amendments are on page eight, the A and growth version as we have now does have that increase, but the proposed amendment eliminates that increase and brings it down to the $25 per product. That's the intent of the amendment, is to reduce the fee.
Okay.
The department's plan was to implement the fee at the $25 per product level, even though the statute would give them room to grow in the future. The legislative fiscal office, in discussion with the department, determined that they had an ending balance and they didn't need the $50 product fee in statute because there were available resources. So we worked with the department to develop this proposed amendment that would bring the fee down to a reasonable level given the available resources that are at hand.
Okay. Thank you.
There's a ballot measure 30 explanation. The bill may affect local government service levels. What caused that?
I think that's a typo. I think it should read that there is not local.
I thought I was missing something.
Yeah. Something in here that should be pointed out.
Okay. I will, at this point, call Chuck Craig from the Department of Agriculture and Chris Kirby from the Department of Agriculture forward to comment on the bill. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for the Department of Agriculture. With me is Chris Kirby. Madam Chair, we had planned for Terry Witt to actually present the portion on the bill with us to be here to answer questions since the bill was brought forward by the industry.
Could we have Terry Witt come forward, please? Good morning, Mr. Witt.
Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I also participated in a multi-stakeholder work group that has been working for well over a year now trying to revise Oregon's fertilizer law. I estimate that currently the work group has pretty close to 3,000 hours of time put into this effort, and we believe that it's long overdue to basically upgrade our antiquated fertilizer program that was initiated back in the 1950s. We think it has positive impact on the grower community, on the consumer community, and also on the state as a whole. We started out, and I think our goals were pretty straightforward, to basically update the fertilizer process, particularly registration and product inspection. We wanted to make sure that we had a stable and funding source for the program that would be basically user generated. We wanted to ensure that we were consistent in Oregon with other states in the Pacific Northwest that have been going through fertilizer modifications. This is extremely important to manufacturers and marketers so that we have a uniform set of standards or conditions to which they can manufacture and sell. Very few manufacturers want to package and label a material for one state only. It becomes very expensive and very complicated in terms of chain of command. We also wanted to devise a more equitable system of spreading the cost. Currently, about 77% of the fertilizer program is paid for by six manufacturers, 77%. And we feel that this is a gross inequity. Major problem with this is that those manufacturers primarily sell into the agricultural market. And so with that great difference in who's paying the costs, we think that unduly burdens the grower, both the agricultural grower and the forest grower that use fertilizers. So these were our goals, and I think we achieved them, and we've been open to discussion, and I'd like to briefly go through my testimony. I'm not going to read it, but I'd like to hit the high points. Point one on page two talks about equity or parity in financial burden. I did already mention the fact that six fertilizer manufacturers and distributors paying almost over three-quarters of the program cost. What this does is you jump on down to about the third or fourth paragraph. It shows you an actual change in how this will redistribute the load, so to speak. There are two circumstances, and because we're switching from a registration on a per brand basis to a per product basis, what it does is it tends to lower the bulk fertilizer tax, tonnage tax, that's being paid by the large manufacturers that are supplying agriculture, and it tends to raise the amount being put into the system by the over-the-counter homeowner type of product. And you can see here there was Company X, I call them, is a company that has 285 products registered in Oregon, listed under 35 different brands. When you look at the impact of the legislation at a proposed fee of $25 registration at a 7,500-ton distribution level, you'll see that the change in revenue that they will put into the system is from $3,500 to about $7,800 or $7,900, so it's more than doubled. Conversely, if you look at one of the companies that has been shouldering all of the burden or most of the burden, they currently are paying $52,000 in fees and taxes. Under the revised schedule, they'll be paying around $16,500. So it significantly reduces that and tends to level out the cost. Section two, we needed to improve our registration process, and one of the major holes in our process was the fact that the department did not have civil penalty authority to really deal with misbranded or adulterated products. So not only have we improved the registration process requiring analysis of content, but also giving the department money to go out and do more monitoring and also to do enforcement if there is a recalcitrant individual or corporation out there. Number three, I mentioned that we were trying to increase product monitoring. The department has not had the resources, both manpower and primarily manpower and dollars, to do what we consider to be an adequate sampling program where you go out and spot check fertilizer loads to see whether they do in fact correspond to the guaranteed analysis that that is being claimed by the registrant. This is extremely important if you're a grower, that you, because you're getting charged for the nutritional value of that product, and if in fact it's you're buying triple 16 and it actually comes out 14, 14, 14, you're getting charged for additional nutrition that you're not putting on the ground and being overcharged. So we think it's extremely important to the growers and to the industry and to the consumer, even the home consumer, that they know what they're getting and they are getting what the commodity or the group product says is on the label. So that's, we think, really important. The fourth thing that the bill does, currently there is a research fund that is established as a portion of the tonnage tax. It's currently set at 25 cents a ton, excuse me, which is the cap. In the past, that fund was statutorily limited to only pesticide and fertilizer research on groundwater. And I think as we all realize with the advent of the Endangered Species Act and the Oregon Plan and many of the other environmental laws that we are trying to comply with, that perhaps the more important area to really be looking at are surface waters. And so this would expand the usability of that research fund to include research on interaction between fertilizers and surface water, and also establish a research committee that would look at the grant proposals that are coming in and help the department determine what is germane, what is on the ground type of research that the growing community really wants done. Five, I think it provides a stable source of funding. As was mentioned, there are some additional carryovers and surpluses. Currently, the department believes that at the end of this fiscal year, there'll be about $380,000 in the program dedicated fund and about $600,000 in the dedicated water quality research fund. Now, I need to mention one caveat that we often forget, and that is that the department raises or collects its fees on a calendar year basis, January through December 31st. Their expenditures or their budget is on a fiscal year from July 1 to June 30th. So part of that, what looks like a surplus, really isn't a surplus. It's a carryover that is needed to fund the first 6 months of the next biennium. So while the $380,000 looks like it's a large amount of money, which it is, it part of that is to pay for the first 6 months of the next biennium. I'll stop there, but I think just in summary, we believe that this brings our laws in line with fertilizer laws in the Pacific Northwest and trends that are being established across the country. There are some standards being worked on right now for what are known as the non-nutritive components, namely the heavy metals. As soon as those standards are completed, the test work is done at the national level, the statute is set up and we will deal with those in rule and establish the standard for Oregon to follow. And as a sidelight to that, one of the things that will be done is the department's website will be expanded to include all of the registered products with all of their guaranteed analysis and eventually the heavy metal components or constituents. That's really important, I think, not just from an environmental right to know kind of perspective, but it's very important for our growers to be able to look at Company X and Company Y
and find out what's in the fertilizer product that they're buying. Not always just the NPK, the nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, but also what are the other things that are in there, particularly in light of some of the sensitivities being raised by food processing companies that are concerned about, you know, are you adding lead, or are you adding arsenic or any of these other heavy metals to your soil? And so it's very important that the agricultural community and the consuming community have an opportunity to know on a product-by-product basis what those analyses include. And as they change, that change then would be fed in, and the website would be updated so that it is always current without having to recall product and relabel. And that's the real intent, is to have it as current as possible. And the registration requirements do say that the registrants must notify the Department of Agriculture with any significant change in their product composition. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions or defer to the gentleman next to me.
Question, Senator Dukes.
Yeah, bear with me here.
Okay.
My terminology will probably all be backwards, and I understood about half of what you said, and I'm only talking about the kinds of things that the home consumer picks up off the shelf and takes home.
Okay.
Those are my parameters. I thought we just did a bill, so maybe it's not. I'm wondering, is it in this bill the lesser ingredients in that you were just talking about, that in the past under Oregon law have had to be under, listed on the label? I don't know if they were or not, but they were required to be. And we did a bill this session that said they don't have to be. You were just talking about those that we're going to go into some kind of rulemaking. I guess I'm trying to understand that better. My sense from what you said was that maybe we don't require by law that they have to be in there, but we all want to know what they are, so as the technology advances, we're going to get there?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, currently the law requires on a fertilizer that the nutrients, either the primary, the secondary, or micronutrients that are being claimed, in other words, that are being offered for sale as being in the product, have to be analyzed, and what we call now a grade statement has to be on the product. What we are looking at are those components that are of lesser concentrations, like parts per million of lead. Those don't fall into the ingredient statement because they're really not added as a micronutrient, or they're not there intentionally. They're not a beneficial component. They happen to be there along with, well, if you mine phosphorus, for example, you do get some other things with it. And so what this will do is provide a mechanism to bring that information to the consumer if they're concerned, or the farmer if they so want to look it up and compare company X to company Y's product. So it's really not, we're not changing anything with regard to the nutritive components. What we're doing is adding what we call the non-nutritives, and that's the products that will be dealt with as soon as standards are developed at the national level. They're working on that right now. California and Washington, I believe, have established their own standards, and we would prefer to wait until the national standards are adopted and then be consistent with that rather than create a whole new regime.
And do the standards say at what level you must list it on the label? Is that what the standards do?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, no. They talk about the maximum, typically maximum agronomic rates. In other words, at what level do they become either potentially problematic to the environment or human health?
So would the label carry that then? It would say this is on 3,000 parts per million and the standard is 10,000?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, no. The website would carry that information. And there would be a 800 number
or a website number to call to look it up.
So if I went to the store and I bought a package of this fertilizer, and it would list on the label all of those smaller unintentional things, and then I would go to a website. Where actually, the reference I'm coming from is there are a lot of organic products coming out of the market. Some of them are, some of them aren't, but they're all got the label. And so you have a growing group of people who actually understand all of those things, and or some of them, and want to know what's in that organic material, and they understand how that relates to whatever else they've got in their yard or garden. And so I'm interested that those things are listed on the package, and you're telling me that this bill says that they will be.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, no. Maybe I can ask some of the experts here. I think you're crossing over from what I can understand. You're crossing over from a fertilizer to a soil amendment. Okay, a fertilizer.
I read the definition, so that I mean I remember.
Fertilizer must have 5% combination of 5% or more nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus.
But you can get organic products that won't combine and do that, can't you?
Yes, you can. And that's, I think, a whole different regulatory scheme, and maybe Chris can jump in and help me there. As a matter of fact, there's some folks in the back of the room that are equally concerned about that, but from the other side.
Because when I went to Fred Meyer the other day and was looking just out of curiosity to see whether or not they carried mm-hmm. some of these products that I had been reading about, yes, indeed they did. And you had Scott's and you had Acme or whatever it was, and you had, you know, a couple of the others. And I thought to myself, but how would I ever know what the heck is in them?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, that's one of the things we're trying to establish with the changes in this law, is a mechanism by which the consumer can, in fact, differentiate between a true fertilizer, a soil amendment, an agricultural mineral, and there are specific requirements that need to be on each of those labels, and there are specific things that cannot be on the label. For example, if you are packaging a material as a compost, you cannot put a guaranteed analysis on there, because when you do that, you become a fertilizer. So there are some, there will be some very specific do's and don'ts that will be developed in rule that will list that out. And with regard to the minor constituents, the non-nutritive portion, there will be you would have to then go to the department's website, access that product by name, and it would tell you what all of, not only the nutritive components are, but also the non-nutritives and the heavy metals.
So it won't be on the label. I can get it by going somewhere else.
That's correct. The reason for that, Senator Dukes, is that those minor non-nutritive things can vary. And if we, first of all, the label would be, you know, be one of these shopping list labels that wouldn't really tell you much, but it would also create some tremendous problems in terms of marketing. Every time they may have changed a source of potassium or phosphorus that had a little different level of zinc or cadmium in it, they'd have to reprint their label. The labels have to be approved by the department. They'd have to either, you know, repackage. This way, they basically, those minor constituent non-nutritive changes would be done on the website. You would be able to know which product is which, and it doesn't interrupt the marketing system.
But isn't this so you don't want to have to list arsenic as an ingredient in a garden fertilizer?
No.
Okay.
Didn't you have a follow-up?
No, I stumbled through that badly enough. I think I'm done. Thank you.
Senator Farioli.
I'd just like to ask a couple of questions. There are some relatively successful composting efforts and recycling efforts happening in municipalities throughout Oregon. Mm-hmm. We've done everything we can to encourage this stuff. The communities conduct regular leaf pickups, garden waste pickups, and the city crews go around and collect garden clippings and compostable materials, and they haul them down to the processing areas of the county landfills where they're put through a tub grinder and windrowed and turned and dried and bagged and then reintroduced into the communities as available fertilizer, well, compost. And I'm just wondering if we are going to have enter the bizarre world of unintended consequences by making so bureaucratically complicated that the cities will back away from composting garden waste and recycling it, by the way, which also supports a financial income stream to continue the recycling effort for bottles, cans, and ordinary garden variety garbage, not garden variety garbage, kitchen garbage. And I'm just wondering, is this, you know, are we going to shoot ourselves in the foot with composting efforts that are going on, like at Lane County? I think they have a model program to say that. I know they do the same thing in Portland.
Are we going to get into that area if we overreach?
Gentlemen, Mr. Kirby.
For the record, my name is Chris Kirby. I'm with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, serving as administrator of the Pesticides Division. Senator Farioli, Madam Chair, to attempt to address the senator's specific question, it is not our intent in the wording of this amendment to specifically regulate compost. I believe Mr. Witt in his testimony pointed out, however, that if a compost has materials added to it, or if particular claims are added to the material such that it guarantees to contain so much nitrogen, phosphorus, or potassium as a fertilizer would, that it then meets the definition of a fertilizer and would be subject to that sort of regulation. However, not making those sorts of claims as a fertilizer or an amendment or as a lime or as a mineral, then it is not subject to our regulation.
Bless you, Madam Chairman.
Follow up.
To my knowledge, I think it's just advertised as high in nutrogen and nitrogen and high in nutritive value, but I don't think there's any specific claims about percentages of constituent components. So I hope it falls outside of the regulatory net that you're casting over fertilizers. Follow up, Madam Chairman. I wonder if the distinguished members of the panel have ever heard of Zoodoo.
Of course, yes.
Would Zoodoo fall under the category of a regulated fertilizer under this bill?
Senator Farioli, Madam Chair, I believe under the current statutes, we have reviewed the labeling for Zoodoo, and my recollection is that it does not make specific claims as to quantities of...
Merely of source.
Merely of sorts. Therefore, my recollection is that it is currently exempt and would continue to be exempt if these amendments are adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That puts my mind much more at ease.
That's my goal, definitely. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, diligently read the labels and check the web pages and then by the one with the biggest picture of tomatoes on the
page. Constantly use twice as much as the label.
Yeah. And then spray it with Roundup before it ever... but my questions are more of a dollar guess. And just give me a ballpark figure. You list in here that currently the six largest manufacturers pay about 77% of the program. Under the proposed legislation, what percentage will that be? How big of a shift will that occur?
Madam Chair, Representative Hinson, I really don't know. My guess would be that it might shift maybe 50% of that would be just a gut guess, and I don't know if Chris or someone that is more familiar with the actual registrants. One of the problems that we've had, and I think this is important to note, is that the current law taxes the first possessor of the material in the state of Oregon. That's an extremely difficult thing to monitor, and the folks that are looking at the revenue source are highly suspicious that we're not capturing the entire influx of fertilizer, and it may be as high as 30 to 40% is escaping
paying its fair share. So while we are increasing anticipate to increase the revenue stream by $150,000 to $180,000, it's our belief that the major share of that is going to be capturing people that aren't paying their fair share currently. And so I don't know if that answers your question or not.
I know. The other question is, we're looking at kind of shifting from the agricultural community to the residential urban area a little bit. What's the dollar value of that shift? Are we talking about shifting maybe 100,000 or 200,000? How much, when we look at the total program, how much is actually, what's a ballpark dollar figure for this?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I don't have those figures with me. Again, if one looks at the number of registrations that have come in over the course of, let's say, the last decade, it's very apparent that the bulk manufacturers and distributors are staying pretty constant, but the over-the-counter homeowner targeted kind of products have really escalated. So my guess would be that with the registration fees being charged on a per product basis, that again we'd probably be seeing a significant shift. Do you have any ideas, Chris, as to what that might be?
Madam Chair,
I really don't know.
I don't have that specific data. We have not. Our system currently does not clearly separate agricultural products from consumer household type products. Certainly, from the standpoint of brands. I think it would be accurate to say that under the existing brand system, we have more products per brand associated with consumer products than we do with agricultural products. This proposed method of funding is a shift from that to a per product basis.
But any guess on what the scope of that shift is going to be? Is it a $100,000 shift or a $300,000 shift?
Representative Hansen, Madam Chair, I don't have a good feel for that. As far as dollars, I think you're talking more in the range of $100,000 than you are $300,000.
Oh, Representative Lowe, isn't
it? Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering what effect, if any, this might have on those folks who have a supply of natural fertilizers, that sort of thing, to organic farmers, people in the organically grown business. I was thinking specifically about some people go and harvest kelps and seaweeds and that sort of thing and wash them off, process them somehow, dry them, and then supply them to the farmer. As I look at page 11, section 16, how in the world anybody could possibly know what all that does, except that it's somehow it magically is good for organic farmers. And is this going to hurt that business?
Madam Chair, Representative Flo, I don't see any impact at all on that business, to be very, very frank with you. I mean, that's, again, I think it goes back to the basic situation of what kind of claim is being made. If they're not making nutritive claims from the standpoint of guaranteed analysis, it's business as usual, basically.
Okay. Representative Heath.
Oh, just a couple of questions on definitions and acronyms. Thanks for reviewing my periodic table knowledge. Yesterday on the House floor, we discussed DNA, and some of us were saying we really need a biochemist up here to help understand this. And here we need one today, too. What's the acronym MPK? What are the...
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, those are the three primary nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Okay.
And those are, whenever you see a fertilizer, typically it almost always has the three components. It'll be 12-12-12 or 32-0-0, something like that. That represents the NPK. And then if there are additional things added, like iron or magnesium, those, it may have three or four or five numbers.
but the first are the three primary nutrients.
And then semantics. It's like my kids that say, why, Daddy? If you have a compost and you put something else into it, then you have to call it a fertilizer. My question is, why? Why can't you say this is still compost? Why can't you say this is a non-fertilizer compost? I mean, why?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, it depends on what's added. For example, triple 16 fertilizer added to a compost, and then claims were made for that compost having specific levels of nitrogen, then it would be a fertilizer because it meets the definition of a fertilizer.
A definition which we have arbitrarily derived.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, again, it goes back to the product then claiming that it contains nitrogen and will provide nitrogen as a plant food.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I think there's two other issues here. One is that if you go out and buy a product that you believe to be, let's say, compost or some sort of soil amendment that would enhance the tillability of your soil, you're not expecting that to contain enough nutrients to injure sensitive plants. So if someone were to add a significant amount of urea, for example, to that to boost the nitrogen, you'd want to know that before you put it around African violets because it'd zap them. On the other hand, we've seen situations where, and I'm sure you have too, if you've gone over to like Fred Meyer, you've got a big bag of material here and it says fertilizer on it, and you got a little bag of material that says fertilizer. They're both $10. Which one do you buy? Well, you know, some people would buy the big one because it's obviously got more fertilizer. Well, if you don't look at the analysis, you won't know how much fertilizer is in the big bag versus the little bag, and typically it's probably you have more nutritive value in the little bag than the big bag. So we're just, it's a truth in advertising and a something that the consumer needs to be aware of when they purchase. And so from that perspective, it's a consumer protection issue.
Thank you. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Furby or Mr. Craig probably know this, although Mr. Witt probably also knows the answer, but it's directed at the department. The bill requires, as we talked about earlier in response to Senator Dukes' question, labeling that refers the purchaser to a department website rather than providing all the details on each label, both because of the volume of the information and because of its changing nature. I have a website now. Is it currently capable of providing appropriate links for this information?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, the website has the capability to do this, but it does need some work on it. It will not automatically happen. It will take some effort to have it happen.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Of course.
Although this is not yet enacted as law, do you have in your work plan getting that website to the point where it is capable of receiving the information? And do you have an approximate ETA?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, it's our full intent that when, assuming that these amendments are adopted as currently worded, that when the department receives information specific to each product and all of its constituents, not just those which are guaranteed, that at that time we will have the capability to put that on our website. At this point in time, we would not foresee that happening until the next registration cycle. And then actually, we would actually need to develop standards. So actually, we have some lead time here to do this development.
Okay, follow up. Of course. Talk about the being off sync between fiscal year and registration cycle. Your next registration cycle is January 2002, right? So am I correct in understanding your response to mean that your department website will have improved the capability of the website so that by January 2002 it will be capable of receiving this information?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, the amendments also propose that, or also specify that we develop standards that we would have to go through rulemaking. I do not believe that we would be able to have that new system completely up and running by January 2002, but would have it up and running by January 2003.
Okay. Follow up, Madam Chair. Are you talking about the bill as engrossed, or is there a new amendment beyond the printed A engrossed version? Terry, maybe you can help me on this one.
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, I believe there is a small amendment to lower the cap from 50 to 25. That's
right.
The only amendment that I am aware of.
That's the only one I saw referenced.
Yes.
So we're talking then about the A engrossed version of the bill on the website.
Representative Nolan, if I may, I've had some discussions with Janet Foltz specifically dealing with this issue of the website, primarily because of, I think, some of the problems we've had with the pesticide use reporting system, with the department initially kind of estimating a startup cost of X, and now it's 5 or 6X or whatever. This, I think, has become an issue with some of the legislators, and I did discuss it with Janet, and it's their intent to get this up and running as soon as possible, that the basic framework is there. They already have, they have a very extensive website that currently lists registrants and products, so it has a database form that would lend itself to this kind of activity. And what I would foresee happening is that the system would be designed to deal with the guaranteed analysis. It could do that early first, and then as the standards for the non-nutritives are developed, they could be added, so that at least there would be a website available that could be accessed for the analysis that is provided currently by the registrants. And as soon as the non-nutritive heavy metal type of standards were developed, then that would be added. Currently, it's not a requirement that the registrants supply that data. So once we, you know, it's kind of hard to put it on until we get the data. But I think the system is capable of being modified with minimal effort. And I believe Janet said that she felt they could do that under existing budget with outside contractors.
Follow up. Mr. Witt, what's involved from the industry's point of view in providing the information on what you call the non-nutritives, the heavy metals and other materials that's identified in Section 4 sub I that was the subject of our dash 5, 6, 7, and 8 amendment version? What will it take your members to be able to provide that information?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, additional resources and analysis and some guidance from the department with regard to the type of laboratory analysis or procedures to follow, so that we have some faith in the validity of the numbers that are coming in. And then once we have those numbers, there's also a corresponding burden, I believe, on the department to check for those, to make sure that the numbers are in fact correct. So it's not just a potential burden on the registrant, but it's also a burden on the department. If you're going to establish a standard, then you need to check to make sure it's being followed.
Madam Chair, Mr. Witt, then, if the department promulgates rules during the, well, the suggestion was that perhaps not by this coming registration cycle, but in advance of subsequent ones, can either you anticipate or the department anticipate any reason that by January 1, 2003, the website won't be available and the information won't have been provided by industry members?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, In terms of, you're talking about now the non-nutritives, that component?
I'm specifically talking about the non-nutritives, the heavy metals and the other materials. You said that that would follow the standard, the guaranteed analysis. So what I'm looking at is the furthest point out, and assuming that anything that can be done more readily will be completed before that.
Madam Chair, Representative.
So the next legislative session that walks in this building January 2003 will be able to go to the department's website and find all the information required in this bill by January 2003. What I'm asking is, does anyone here see any reason that that will not happen?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, the only reason I could foresee that that didn't happen is if for some reason the federal agencies have not come to conclusion on some sort of standard. If things were delayed at the national level, that could in fact delay what we do in Oregon. At some point in time, I think we will have to then make a decision as to whether or not we want to continue to wait or whether we want to adopt our own standards like Washington and California have, although that creates a whole new set of problems when you do that. And that's one of the reasons why that we've adopted taken the position that we want to be proactive so that we can help chart our own course rather than be the dog wagged by the tail.
I heard that correctly, Madam Chair, Mr. Witt. What I heard you say is, absent intervention by the federal agencies, you don't see a reason that your industry members couldn't meet that target. And Madam Chair, I'll be quiet if I could get an actual verbal response instead of a nod from the department representative.
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, you are correct.
Thank you.
Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed that since some of the labeling requirements are incomplete and somewhat cryptic and you go to a website for further explanation, I'm wondering if that information is being made available or will be made available in alternative forms for those people who do not have access to technology to use a website.
Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, it would be my understanding that if there was indeed someone that had a problem, they could probably contact the department. However, all of the libraries now have access to the web, and there are a number of sources to where even if an individual does not have internet capability in their own home or business, that it's readily available in the community.
Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, it would fully be our intention if someone called and said, I can't understand what's on the website or I need some additional information, that our people would be available to help that person.
Follow-up, Representative Lowe?
No. Thank you.
Ma'am. Representative Krieger.
Madam Chair, I find it interesting that we're discussing concern regarding trace elements, heavy metals, as they are natural in the environment and many, many things. The average woman would get the same information from her lipstick, fingernail polish, soap, perfumes. They probably would all stop using them because they're there in heavier and higher concentrations. But when we talk about food that we're going to eat, we seem to think more about that concern than what we paint on ourselves or the rouge we put on. I don't care what the gals do.
Oh, you're doing well. Go ahead.
And when I took my course in the Department of Agriculture application of herbicides, herbicide applicators permit, they were talking about the parts per billion of this particular thing in a Hershey candy bar is greater than it is in this herbicide. Everybody quit eating Hershey candy bars for a week, they're all right back to it.
Talk to polyester.
Are there any further questions, Senator Dean?
I guess this is sort of a continuation of something Representative Lowe started here with her kelp and Senator.
Don't blame me.
Senator Ferrioli's questions about unexpected consequences. According to page 11, a person may not sell, offer for sale, or distribute one of these things, including an agricultural amendment. And if I read agricultural amendment correctly, kelp falls into that. Just, I've been reading literature that talks about the value of that, and it occurred to me that, that I live really close to the beach, and that's just there a good portion of the time, that I could go out sometime and take some containers with me and all the stuff home and soak it. And anyway, there are processes that you can go through to do it. Now, if I wanted to give some of that to my neighbor, am I distributing it? Am I breaking the law?
Senator Dukes, Madam Chair, I think one needs to go back to the definition of an agricultural amendment,
mm-hmm.
and it speaks to intent of the product, and in that interpretation, this is not significantly different from the existing statute, is that there's a difference between making available kelp or making available a product which does this particular thing, which, by the by, contains kelp. Again, it goes back to what is the intent in the marketing? What are the claims made for the product?
Well, under agricultural amendment definition, it includes a naturally occurring substance.
Marketed for a particular intent.
Well,
why would you put kelp on?
If you didn't expect a particular intent. I mean, the reason for giving it to the neighbor or for hauling it home to start out with would be that my garden would produce more of those shiny red tomatoes that Representative Hansen is interested in. So if I gave him some kelp, with both of us expecting, and I'm telling him, you know, I've read that this stuff can really make your tomatoes grow better.
See it now.
I have just distributed a naturally growing product with the intent that he's going to have bigger tomatoes.
Perhaps we could get it medically registered in our distribution.
I mean,
we want before and after measurements on the tomatoes, too.
Well, after he dumps the Roundup on it, my kelp probably isn't going to help much. But
Senator Duke, and Chair, again, and particularly I don't see a difference between existing statutes and the proposed amendments regarding this. It has to do with marketing of the product. It has to do with claims made for the product and how the product is labeled. And there can be differences for products. You can have the same material, say compost or kelp or dried fish or whatever, and there can be different labeling. One of those makes the intent, makes the claim that it will do something of a plant food nature, and that's different than the other product that doesn't make any such claims.
Well, and it even says physical or chemical changes in the soil, which there would be no purpose in putting this stuff into your flower bed or your vegetable garden if it wasn't. I guess mostly what I'm focusing on is if someone goes out and collects things and then gives them to someone else, do they meet the definition of distributing?
Senator Dukes, Madam Chair, I believe that they would not cross the line into regulation of that, just as with manure, unfortified manure that one would obtain from a rancher in and of itself is not considered to be a fertilizer and is not subject to regulation currently, nor would be.
Okay, but I'm trying to get back to distribute. It may not be considered a fertilizer, but it clearly is a, that definition go, a naturally occurring substance, and the intent would be that it would, by my hauling it home from the horse barn, that I'm going to have, I don't know, bigger flowers. So I think you mean all of that. All I'm asking is if I drop half a truckload off at the neighbor's, am I distributing that stuff?
Senator Dukes, Madam Chair, again, I have to go back to, you know, the intent and the guarantee. If you were distributing horse manure.
But am I distributing?
Are you?
I don't know what the definition of distribute means. Do I have to get money for it to be distributing it? If I give it away free, am I distributing it?
Well,
if
you're going to need it.
What? didn't hear that. So I don't know what the what your definition in this bill is of distributing.
Senator Dukes, Madam Chair, I believe the definition in the amendment as well as in the existing statute distribution would be giving. It isn't necessarily contingent upon for profit or
okay.
business activity.
Okay. And I think I better keep my kilt to myself.
Representative Lowe had a question.
Thank you. Under criminal law, this distributing of regulated products or whatever is just delivery. Delivery okay. is sufficient. So if there's going to be consistency in the law, we ought to at least make a record that that is not the intent in this situation. But my question is, what about sewer districts that dry the sludge and sell it? I know somebody who uses this on his garden.
Representative Lowe, Madam Chair, this was a specific discussion of the.
Oh, I'm so glad I missed it. Never mind.
regarding these types of products, and again, it goes back to the way the material is presented. If it is presented with a particular guarantee that it does contain so much of a nutrient, then it would be subject to regulation as compared to this is dried sewage sludge and may have some organic value. Those are different sorts of claims. And the latter one, where it is a general, here's the product, it might have some value, was not intended to be regulated.
I think I'll be quiet.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, and maybe I should try to be picky, but your definition says intended as a source of plant food. Now, if they're going to sell it to you for your garden, it's intended as a source of plant food. I mean, even if all you're growing is weeds in your garden.
Sorry.
It's the definition of agricultural
amendment. Senator Duke, are you referring to the biosolids question? Mm-hmm. Because if you go down that page to line 26,
that's right.
It specifically exempts septogen municipal.
That's right, it does.
Products.
But any of the kelp, the horse manures, the rest of them, as long as they're intended as a source of plant food. I haul it, the horse manure to the neighbors because they wanted something to put into their vegetable garden, and clearly it becomes a source of plant food then. So, not that I think that a lot of people are going to come after me, but I think that they could under your bill.
Madam
Chair. Well, if I might add, too, I think that the discussion in the committee clearly indicates that it is not the intent of the bill to have this type of material included in the labeling regulations. And I think that this may be an area that the department would like to clarify when they write the rules. But clearly, we have it on record here that the intent of the bill is not to regulate this type of product.
Madam Chair, I might add also that with regard to, like, manures, unmanipulated manures are exempt also. So, I mean, just hauling manures that have not been processed is exempt from the regulation. I might add that I think it's this new statute is somewhat confusing because of the way we had to construct it in legislative council. Normally, matter of fact, when we started out, we did an actual strike and add version of it, which took the existing 633 statutes and showed all of the changes. It became so convoluted with trying to refer from section to section that LC said we need to just delete the existing 633 and present the amended version as all new statute. And I think if we had the original version where it was original plus strike and score, that you would see that many of these areas, particularly the ones that we've been just discussing, have been in existence for a long time, and I believe the department has a good history to show what their intent is with regard to registration and taxation.
Representative Lowe,
Representative Krupp, we have other people that wish to testify on this bill, too, so we need to kind of keep rolling here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Terry, so if you're talking about the manure is exempt, so is my mint waste that I sell to my neighbors for their gardens also exempt?
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments for the department or for Mr. Witt? Thank you very much, gentlemen. I call Mike Dewey and Pete Tess. I said it's just going to be Pete Tess. Can
Madam Chair, do we have actual amendment language?
What's that?
Do we have amendment language?
Where the LSO recommendation is on the back of the packet. Good morning, Mr. Tess.
Good morning, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pete Tess, Associate Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Mike Dewey offers his apology. He had a conference call at 11 and had to get out for it, so he told me what he wanted to say, and we pretty well agreed, and so you'll have a combined verbal acknowledgement of our feelings related to this legislation. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on 3815A. We would like to commend the task force for the hard and heavy lifting they did to try and do this. We've watched other states get into this process, and they've made many errors and shown many problems that when they were done, when they had to do it under force or under some outside force to get it done, and I think this group has done a really excellent job trying to keep our state from falling into some of the many mistakes other states have made, particularly in the effort to allow for the, rather than doing their own standards, wait for the federal government to get theirs rather than starting to try and do things that we're not sure and there's no scientific support for. It takes a lot of estimation and guess out of the process. As far as there are many, much of what Terry said we agree with and really do not want, have to go over it, I will indicate that Oregon Farm Bureau, two years ago and at the last session when Washington was having trouble with their fertilizer process bill, did put into their policy that we want the right to know for fertilizer and what people put on their, on agriculture producers put on their land. There, that was a major issue, and if somebody applies the wrong thing and loses his crop, or in the long run they lose his land with a buildup of some undesirable toxicant, is something we wanted to avoid, and the only way to do that is have the right to know so you can figure that out. And I think this bill goes a long way to protect farmers and their crops and their land in this process, and in doing it in such a way that it's not overly expensive and overburdensome to anyone involved, and does allow everyone to find out what they need to know one way or another if they really want to know it. I think the some of the benefits, though, is knowing what's in the product will help, but it also will help us with the environmental problems that the wrong product could cause. But the research that will be done with potentially part of this money, I think, goes a long way to help with some of that. By moving it to surface water, we all know with the 10-10 process and what's coming down the pike with runoff and erosion problems related to water quality, there's a lot we don't know about how nutrients get from the land into the water. And in knowing that, we can do a better job of trying to keep that from happening, both helping us financially by not wasting it, but at the same time helping us and the environment. So that amount of money that would be actually expanded to surface water research, I think, is positive to this bill, and it will help us in our 10-10 and water quality issues related to agriculture down the road. Also within this, we do see a little more fairness in the process of who is paying part of the bill. By moving from the brand name to the product, we do see there is a lot of urban use of fertilizer, and sometimes a lot of urban misuse of fertilizer. And they have reality not been carrying their fair end of the load up to now. With a change to from brand to product, that distributes the costs and the input to this program more as much to the urban as is to the agriculture user who has a different thing, most of them buying in bulk. So we feel that has balanced that issue out a little more for us, and potentially to make urban users realize that they are in this game a little more so than some of them like to admit sometimes. So we do support this effort. I'm sure that like any effort, we may down the road have to look at some changes if things don't work quite the way we want.
this is a step in the right direction. It has incorporated a lot of mistakes or avoided a lot of the mistakes other states have made, and we heartily support this bill.
Questions or comments from Mr. Test? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I call Will I think it's Charnleton and Wendy Fisher from the Composting Council. Or anyone they wish to bring forward with.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Doug Myers and I represent the Association of Oregon Recyclers. And as part of recycling is composting. And Will Charlton, who's the chair of the Composting Council of Pro-Grow Mixes, and Jack Hoke of Rexius Forest Byproducts would like to address the committee, and I hope we have written testimony.
Thank you for taking time to come here today, gentlemen.
Madam Chair, my name is Jack Hoke. I'm representing the Composting Council of Oregon and Rexius Forest Byproducts. We produce a lot of compost and soil amendments, and have some concerns about just some of the clarity of the bill. I think there's some room for confusion of what is considered a fertilizer and what is considered a soil amendment, and some of the discussion here today, I think, points that out. A lot of issues. Try to be brief, but compost is not normally considered, in our estimation, a fertilizer. We're not selling it for fertilizer value. It's usually to amend the soil, to improve the tilth, water holding capacity, etc. And it becomes a fine line of what we do to that then to when it becomes, in this bill, a fertilizer, if we add lime to it. Is lime really a fertilizer? Well, no, but then, you know, it does change the pH or buffering capacity of the material. Does that put it into a fertilizer or a soil amendment or a, you know? So there's some real fine details that I think we need some clarification on. I guess I'm just a little concerned about some of the vagueness of what is and what isn't. Even as far as if it's most of the things exempted out if it's bulk. If it's packaged, then I think it's a little more defined. But even bulk, if we make a product, let's say it's a topsoil blend, and we put compost and there's soil and there's lime and there's maybe a component of fertilizer in it. What is that? And is that going to be taxed? Do we have to register that product? We make special blends for growers that maybe are for a greenhouse industry where they're very specific directly to an end consumer who ordered it from us. I think that maybe that is exempted, but if we then have this topsoil that I just mentioned, is that not exempted? So I think there's some room for clarification there.
If I might just interject, were you involved at all in the work group that formulated the language of the bill?
I attended one meeting.
The issues that you raise, I think, are important issues, but they are issues that would appear to me to be very addressable during the rulemaking phase, where the implementation is of the bill is actually worked out. And those are the kind of details, I think, that would be very well served by being addressed during the rulemaking phase. And I would be very happy if the department included you in that process.
Yes, and that's, I think, part of where we are concerned. The devil is in the details,
yes,
many times, and it's just how these things are sorted out. And that's probably my primary concern. Some areas I think it's very clear where we stand. There's other areas that it's very vague where we would stand.
And I think that whenever we in the process here are writing statute or passing bills that will become statute, it's very difficult on that level to deal with all of the ramifications and implications, but that's a very legitimate part of the rulemaking process is to make sure that, for instance, products that your company manufactures don't fall on one side of a definition when they should be on the other side of a definition.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Will Charlton. I'm
also sits on the, I sit on the board of the Composting Council of Oregon, and I work for a company called ProGrow Mixes. Right now, we are setting up several composting facilities dealing with agricultural waste and turning them into a valuable product for the nursery industry. Like Jack, we have very many of the same issues surrounding it, and of course that can be worked out in an administrative, however. First off, I'd like to express that we are not in opposition of the bill as a whole. We actually do support the initiative behind this and feel it is a very good approach. We just have a few problems with the definitives, few pinpoints in there. Something that I have a problem with in there is the definition of compost. Right now, the scientific industry is actually exploring this. There are, to say compost could include mulches, could include a material that comes out of these anaerobic digesters, the energy from methane, called fiber. That could also be included as a compost through many definitions. There's horse manure compost, there's yard debris compost, mushroom compost. Where do we draw the line, I guess, is a concern. Mulches, mint mulches, all of these other issues as well. I think that's something that the scientific community has yet to really draw a line on, and it's very hard to establish that line in a governmental state when the science community still is trying to.
And if I might interject there, I would assume that as technology goes forward and agricultural practices go forward, that the definition of compost is going to forever be a definition that is open to being revised. And again, I would very much encourage you to be involved in the rulemaking part of this, so that from the perspective of your industry, the way that the definition in the bill is applied conforms to the spirit of the intent of the bill. And clearly, the committee, and I don't think that any of the other committees that this bill has been discussed in, have any intention whatsoever in impeding businesses from practicing business, that this is clearly a bill that's oriented towards consumers knowing what they're consuming. And so I would very, very much encourage you to be involved and make sure that from the points of view of your businesses and the products that you're involved in putting on the market, that the bill works for you. Representative Nolan.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I think your advice to participate in the rulemaking process makes good sense. I served on the Agriculture and Forestry Committee that heard this on a policy level, and we did not have an opportunity to really examine the implications on composting of the policy language in here. That, I think, can be addressed in rulemaking. What perhaps can't be addressed in rulemaking is something that's included in the written testimony that is presented here, but hasn't really been discussed, and that is differential in taxing on a per ton basis. I don't think the department can overrule the statute on that, and that I think needs to be. We did not discuss the tax rates at all in the policy committee, and if it's going to be addressed, it has to be addressed in this committee, or the department can't, by rule, change any tax rates that the statute establishes. If the gentleman wants, if that is an important issue, now would be the time to raise that. That can't wait for rulemaking.
The implication of the tax? Is that
the differential between compost application and fertilizer application?
Mr. Witt is indicating he has some information to bring forward on this.
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, this issue came up yesterday when I talked with Doug. My name is Terry Witt, Oregonians for Food and Shelter. The idea of whether or not tonnage taxes would have to be the same, and we looked up in rule, and currently in the rule, which deals with these taxes, agricultural minerals, amendments, and fertilizers are all listed separately,
and the bill only speaks to maximum caps, Representative Nolan. So we do have the ability to establish fees anywhere up to that maximum. And there's nothing that says that we can't have, as we do for gypsum and did have for lime, have a different taxing structure based upon the value and the equivalent amount of material being moved. So we have that ability, and I think it would be our intent to look at it and make sure that it is fair and equitable. And if the 10 cents per ton is too high for the compost industry based upon comparative values, we would seriously entertain a less than 10 cent per ton starting out at the that's what we anticipate we'll be at for the other fertilizers and amendments.
And Madam Chair, if I hear no different interpretation from either the department or from Doug, they'd be very happy that we don't have to deal with it today.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, I don't want to cut you off. If you have more points you'd like to raise, please feel free.
Well, that's fine. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here that we have a piece of public testimony that was given to us in writing? Mr. Fletcher, could you hand this out so everyone has that? Is there anyone else here that wishes to give testimony on this bill that wasn't signed up to speak? Can they come forward now? And seeing none, I will close the public hearing portion and open the work session on House Bill 3815. Representative Hayden.
I question the presence of a quorum.
We have Senator Ferrioli, who has said that he will show up here in approximately 30 seconds.
Madam Chair,
you like to make a
because he's always on time, we trust him.
Madam Chair.
He's always on time.
That's right.
I move the following amendment into House Bill 3815 on page 8 of the A engrossed bill. Delete the numeral 50 and insert the numeral 25.
Madam Chair, can I ask you a question?
Discussion on the amendment. Now we need the senator.
Page 8, line 20.
We were just handed some testimony with a whole bunch of concerns.
Ah.
Have any of these been addressed? Oregon concept of waste derived products is related to fertilizer is flawed. The new requirements of a department rulemaking 10 and 11.
Mr. Witt, have you taken a look at this?
Madam Chair, Terry Witt, for the record. I have not seen this particular set of amendments, but the questions or concerns raised look very familiar to the concerns that we have been working with Jim Skillen for a period of time. We have, in fact, Madam Chair, answered all of the questions that have been raised here. Obviously, not to their complete satisfaction, part of which is due to lack of familiarity with Oregon law. For example, some of the terminology they're talking about in terms of industrial waste and waste, they're looking at RCRA laws at the federal level. They're not looking at DEQ laws at the state level. We have a different set of standards that go beyond federal law here in the state of Oregon. We have been working with the folks from RISE, and interestingly enough, we do represent RISE on several issues before the legislature this year. It is our intention, and we have offered to them, and they have accepted to be part of the rulemaking process to see if any of these problems are indeed real and can be mitigated in the rulemaking process.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative Nolan, did you have a comment or
I
question?
Did have a comment on that specific point, and I obviously have not read this in detail either since I just received it, but I participated quite actively in the review of this bill, as I alluded to in earlier comments today when it was in the substantive committee, and we went through
an excruciating level of amendment and negotiation on the substance of the bill through 8 complete rewrites of the bill. And I just want to confirm Mr. Witt's testimony that we considered a lot of the issues that are raised in this communication. Just because we consider them anyway, because great minds think alike, I guess. So while I can't say that I can answer point for point the issues raised here, I can tell you that the industry and the environmental community and the committee looked at the issues that were raised in this memo. And Mr. Witt deserves enormous.
The committee will stand at ease while we go chumming.
Oh, here we are. Set aside the counter seconds a little bit.
In work session, Representative Hayden, could you restate your motion?
Madam Chair, I recommend on page 8 of the A in gross bill, line 20, to delete the words $50 and insert the words $25, thereby amending House Bill 3815A.
We have the motion as stated. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? The motion is carried. Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, on the last page of the bill, page 17, following section 30, after line 27, I move the following language be added to House Bill 3815A. Notwithstanding any other law, the amount of $394,057 is established for the biennium beginning July 1, 2001, as the maximum limit for payment of expenses from fees, monies, or other revenues, including miscellaneous receipts, excluding lottery funds and federal funds collected or received by the Department of Agriculture for the purpose of carrying out this 2001 Act.
We have a motion to include that wording in the bill. Is there any discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, a little housekeeping. There are LFO recommendations that 3 positions be established, 1.88 FTE, that is, and these are also found on the fiscal analysis of proposed legislation, page 6. 2 natural resource specialists, 3, which is 2 positions or 1.5 FTE, and 1 office specialist, 1 position, 0.38 FTE. And also, Madam Chair, I would recommend the striking on the fiscal analysis of the language relating to ballot measure 30. I do not think it pertains.
We have a motion to strike the ballot measure 30 language from the fiscal analysis and to recommend that the agency be authorized to establish 1.88 FTE. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there opposition to the motion? Without opposition, the motion is carried. Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, I recommend passage and referral with a new pass recommendation to the full Ways and Means Committee of House Bill 3815A as amended.
We have a motion on the table. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there opposition to the motion? Without opposition?
Representative Law. I think it's a crazy consent to this. I am concerned about one component, and that is the small manufacturers or the small distributors of these products might be hurt or adversely impacted. And this may favor bigger business, and I don't want to hurt any small local Oregon industry that may be involved in this. So with that caveat, I'll give a consent, but I would like to have some further information on whether or not this is going to adversely impact local business.
Would the record please reflect Representative Lowe's courtesy vote? Any further discussion on the motion? Any further opposition to the motion? The motion is passed. Carriers, I'll carry this in full. Senator Farrelly,
naturally,
carry
Madam
it in
Chair.
The Senate.
I can envision a floor speech that asserts the fact that we have protected Oregonians from unregistered and possibly adulterated compost. and for the registered fertilizer for the benefit of Oregonians, Madam Chairman.
Well, it's a good thing that LFO writes our speeches for
it. It is. I never use them, but it's a good thing.
And I will have Representative Krupp carry this on the House as it's just Mr. Russell, would you like to bring us anything on what we'll be doing tomorrow?
Madam Chair, tomorrow we have three bills scheduled. Two were the bills you, the committee heard on Monday, yesterday, relating to taxation, forestry taxation. They'll be scheduled for work session. And there's also House Bill 2200, which is relating to forestry carbon offsets, which we'll have scheduled for tomorrow.
So please be here so we can vote on these bills. And no further information being before the committee or no further issues.